Judges 20, starting in verse 8. And all the people rose up as one man, saying, "Not one of us shall go to his tent, and not one of us shall return to his house. And now this is the thing which we shall do in Gibeah, going against it by lot. And we shall take 10 men of 100 of all the tribes of Israel, and 100 of 1,000, and 1,000 of 10,000 to take food for the people, that they may act when they come to Gibeah of Benjamin, according to all the folly which it has done in Israel. And every man of Israel is gathered to the city, knit together as one man." And the tribes of Israel sent men to all the tribes of Benjamin, saying, "What is this evil which has happened among you? And now give up the men, the worthless sons which are in Gibeah, and we shall put them to death, and we shall consume evil from Israel." But Benjamin was not willing to listen to the voice of their brothers, the sons of Israel. And the sons of Benjamin were gathered out of the cities to Gibeah to go out to battle with the sons of Israel. And the sons of Benjamin counted themselves on that day. Out of the cities were 26,000 men drawing sword, besides the inhabitants of Gibeah, who counted themselves 700 chosen men. Among all this people were 700 chosen men who had bound the right hand, each of these people, to sling a stone at a hair. And he did not miss. The men of Israel numbered themselves, besides Benjamin, 400,000 men drawing sword, each of these a man of war. And they rose up and went up to Bethel and asked of God. And the sons of Israel said, "Who shall go up for us at the beginning of the battle with the sons of Benjamin?" And the Lord said, "Judah at the beginning." And the sons of Israel rose up in the morning and camped against Gibeah. And the men of Israel went to battle with Benjamin, and the men of Israel set themselves in order against them to battle against Gibeah. The sons of Benjamin came out from Gibeah. On that day they destroyed 22,000 to the earth in Israel. And the people, the men of Israel, made themselves strong and again set the battle in order in the place where they set themselves on the first day. The sons of Israel went up and wept before the Lord until the evening and asked of the Lord, saying, "Shall I again draw near to battle with the sons of my brother Benjamin?" And the Lord said, "Go up against him." The sons of Israel drew near to the sons of Benjamin on the second day. And Benjamin came out to meet them from Gibeah on the second day and again destroyed to the earth 18,000 men of the sons of Israel. All these were swordsmen. And all the sons of Israel went up, even all of the people, and came to Bethel and wept. And they sat there before the Lord and fasted on that day until the evening, and caused burnt offerings and peace offerings to ascend before the Lord. The sons of Israel asked of the Lord, and the Ark of the Covenant of God was there in those days. And Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron, was standing before it in those days, saying, "Shall I again go out to battle with the sons of my brother Benjamin, or shall I cease?" The Lord said, "Go up, for tomorrow I will give them into your hand." And Israel set ambushers against Gibeah all around. The sons of Israel went up against the sons of Benjamin on the third day and set themselves in order against Gibeah as at other times. The sons of Benjamin came out to meet the people. They were drawn away out of the city and began to strike the people down wounded as at the other times in the highways, of which one goes up to Bethel and one to Gibeah in the field, about 30 men of Israel. And the sons of Benjamin said, "They are destroyed before us as at the beginning." But the sons of Israel said, "Let us flee and draw them away out of the city into the highways." And all the men of Israel rose from their place and set themselves in order at Baal Tamar. And Israel's ambush came out of its place, out of the meadow of Gibeah. They came in across from Gibeah, 10,000 chosen men out of all Israel, and the battle was heavy. They did not know that evil was striking against them. The Lord struck Benjamin before Israel. The sons of Israel destroyed 25,100 men on that day in Benjamin. All these were swordsmen, and the sons of Israel saw that they were beaten. The men of Israel had given place to Benjamin, for they were trusted to the ambush. For they trusted to the ambush which they had set against Gibeah. The ambush hurried and came out against Gibeah, and the ambush drew itself out and struck of the city by the mouth of the sword. There was a sign set for the men of Israel with the ambush, there causing a rising of smoke to go up from the city. The men of Israel turned in battle, and Benjamin had begun to strike, causing some to be slain in the men of Israel, about 30 men. For they said, "Surely they are beaten down before us as at the first battle." And the rising of smoke began to go up from the city, a pillar. Benjamin turned around, and behold, the whole city had gone up toward the heavens. The men of Israel turned, and the men of Benjamin were troubled, for they had seen that evil had struck them. They turned before the men of Israel toward the way of the wilderness. The battle followed them. Those who were from the city were destroyed, who were destroying them in their midst. They surrounded Benjamin, and they pursued them without rest. They trod them down until they were opposite Gibeah at the rising of the sun. And 18,000 men of Benjamin fell, all of these mighty men. And they turned and fled toward the wilderness, toward to the rock of Rimmon. And they gleaned 5,000 men of them in the highways, and caught them to Gidom. They struck 2,000 men of them, and all the ones of Benjamin who fell were 25,000 men drawing the sword on that day. All of these mighty men. And 600 men turned and fled into the wilderness to the rock of Rimmon. And they lived in the rocks of Rimmon 4 months. And the men of Israel turned back to the sons of Benjamin and struck them by the mouth of the sword, from the entire city to livestock to all that was found. And they set fire to all the cities which were found.
Thank you, Jeff, for reading that. I know this is obviously a difficult topic with regards to the last end of Judges. It's never a pleasant subject matter to discuss when you're dealing with the death of Israelites by their own hand. One little spot here I forgot to mark on my map, which is the location of Rimmon. So before I'll begin my little spiel today, any comments or questions? There's probably a few, potentially. Things that caught your attention or you're not quite sure about or something that seems bizarre.
Why were they fighting with each other?
So we're here the last previous weeks. But yes, we'll discuss that shortly. Well, I'll just answer it right now. Well, because of what Benjamin did to the concubine of a Levite man. Raped her and she died. And he cut her up and distributed her throughout all of Israel to get all the tribes angry enough to go to war.
Wow. Benjamin didn't do that.
The Levite cut her up, but Benjamin was the one who caused her death. The Gibeonites. They're from Gibeah. They're Benjamites, but they're specific for this particular town that caused her death. Yes, the wicked men. Well, if there are no other questions or comments, I'll just go right into this. All right. Well, refresh our memories just a little bit. I know it's been a few weeks regarding what happened in the previous chapter. Yes, as I mentioned, the Levite with his concubine were traveling from Bethlehem, from down in Judah, traveling up back to his hometown near the foothills of Ephraim, which is not too far distant from Shiloh, which is where the Ark of Covenant is at this point in time in history. It'll be there for, I think, another 30 years, I think it's very 40 years. Well, I don't know. A few more years go by before it gets moved again. So that's where he was headed. He stayed in Gibeah because it was of his own clansmen, meaning they were all Israelites versus other towns, which were not at that time. So he stays there. They attempt to assault him. But instead he gives his concubine out. They assault her. She dies. He goes in the morning, takes her body, cuts her up to 12 pieces, scatters her throughout all of Israel. And the purpose was to get the people of Israel riled up. And this is a disgusting behavior. It's something that should never have been done. So gets all the armies together and they go fight the Benjamites. So that's kind of background as far as what's actually happening this time. You recall last time, or 2 weeks ago, I forgot, whatever it was. When was this occurring?
Early part
of Judges. Very, very early. Yes, it's in the end of the book, but it's actually occurring very early. How do we know that?
Because of the priest here.
The priest is one of them. Phinehas is alive and the high priest at this time. Well, he was a relatively old man by the time Othniel, the first judge, took power. So he's not a young man. He's had to be early on, one of the very first judges. What else do we know about it? The city named, which is actually earlier in the chapter, which we had read last week, the city of Dan. Well, Dan didn't exist until a certain time had already passed. So we know how close we are to that approaching moment as far as where when Dan, the city, was established. So we're getting fairly close to an early part of Othniel, which we'll read what's going on during Othniel's time. Again, we'll go back there today and reread what was happening, why he took power, and what was going on with the Israelites, which is relevant what's happening here. This is one of the stories that's happening during Othniel's issues. So the Benjamites, who of course, they get slaughtered pretty badly here. One of them, of course, is Ehud's grandfather. Ehud is the second judge of Israel, third judge of Israel. Like there's Joshua, Othniel, Ehud. Ehud was a Benjamite, left-handed man as well. His grandfather was amongst these 600 survivors. Fortunately, he found a wife later, but we'll discuss that next chapter. Yes, Bill.
They don't seem to be consulting Yahweh as much as Israel is either.
Right. They're not talking to God a whole lot in this chapter, which is a key issue, which is one of the main problems going on here. How often do they go and say, all right, God, give me information. What's going on? How do we fix this? Yes, Carmel.
Well, during the battle, they keep consulting him, and he's saying go, but yet he's not.
It's a different type of consultation. We'll get into that. Because something else was happening at the same moment in time, just earlier than this happened, which was the establishment of the city of Dan. Which, if you recall, was the graven images. And Moses' grandson, being the high priest of the northern tribes, was just recently established. That is the epitome of Baal worship, because he created carved images, named them God, and said, these are your gods.
But wasn't that the tribe of Benjamin that did that?
This is the tribe of Dan that did that action. They moved up north and established the city of Dan. So that's one scenario that had just occurred right before this one happens.
And Dan is all joined up with Israel.
He's all part of Israel, and no one in Israel did anything against it because it was Moses' grandson. You don't go against Moses' grandson because it's Moses. You just don't do that. Well, this is unacceptable behavior. You know that all of Israel is quite upset by the treatment of the concubine. How many of them were upset by the establishment of a second high priest, a second priesthood? Not one went to war against that, which they should have gone to war with. But they did not. So God is not happy with Israel at this moment in time. Not happy at all. That they would go to war against for a flesh issue, but won't go to war against a spiritual issue that's so much more significant. So we have a hand up, I guess. Okay. So that's contemporary things are happening at this moment. Okay. Second mistake. regarding this chapter 20. The first one we discussed last time, which was the Levite got them all together at Mitzpah, which is a town, border town just north of the Benjamite territory. And he said, all right, all you men of Israel, give me what you're going to do. Give me a verdict now. There's no trial. There was no high priest present. There was no Ark of the Covenant there. The house of God is up in Shiloh, and they weren't there. They didn't ask God, what are we supposed to go do? How do we handle this scenario? God, what is your plan? What are we supposed to be doing at this moment in time? Did they ask at all? No, they actually didn't ask at all. Even during the process of asking him later who goes up next, they didn't ever actually ask, what should we have been doing from the beginning? It's the same scenario that Joshua caught in. Yes, Ellie.
Well, it says in verse 28, shall I yet again go out to battle against the children of Israel? And Yah said, go up tomorrow, I'll deliver them. What are they doing? They have the...
We're going to get into that. There's interesting things that are going on here, which we're going to get into, I hope, when I get to that point. But early on, at least initially, they have not consulted him.
Right.
All right. There is no high priest during this mock trial. There is no Urim and Thummim during the mock trial. It is, hey, Gibeah did this. What are we all going to go do about it? Well, we're all going to go to war.
That's when Israel went
That's
to war.
That's a jury and guilty or verdict, isn't it?
Yeah.
But did God give the verdict? Yeah, he gives all of them. Did God give that verdict? No, he didn't. He didn't actually give that verdict. He may have had a different scenario designed. We don't know, and we never will know. But this is what the men of Israel chose to do. It's a very bad choice, considering they just coming off the heels of Moses, who told them, when certain things happen, this is the procedure of trial that you have to go through. You don't get to skirt around it. You don't get to get around the trial and the laws that God established. And we just witnessed it. They deliberately went around it. Not acceptable behavior. Especially in a civilized, I use that term, society. Who kill each other with swords. I don't know how civilized that is, so that's all right. okay. So, we have that established going on. They currently gave him a mock trial. They came with a verdict. They're all going to go to battle. Yes. By the way, they don't have the word for 10%. So they have to say, 10 out of 100, 100 of 1,000, 1,000 out of 10. They don't have the term percent. By the way, just as a minor detail, why the Bible reiterates it over and over and over again. They use that phrase when they're talking about percentages, because they don't have that word. Per 100 doesn't make any difference to them. So, this is a minor detail, but I thought it was kind of funny, which they're all support staff. Verse 12 and 13. The tribe sent men to all the clans of Benjamin, saying, what is this outrage that has occurred to you? Now turn over these worthless men who were in Gibeah, and we will put them to death and eliminate them, leaving the evil from Israel. Note, they were not passing judgment on the entire tribe of Benjamin. Just its biggest, most populous town. Why do you think the Benjamites refused? Oh, yeah, it points here quite clearly. But the children of Benjamin, in verse 13, refused to heed the voice of their brothers, children of Israel. The children of Benjamin were gathered together from the cities to Gibeah to go to war. What do you think was going through their minds that they would refuse? It seems, on the surface, a very simple request.
Right. But the verdict was not given by God. That would be...
The normal would be correct. A verdict given by God, and this was not done. Did Benjamin know that God wasn't consulted?
They must have.
They must have. How did they know? You're right. How did they know?
Because didn't they get a part also?
Yes,
did
they did.
Did they know that the meeting was in Mitzpah and not in Shiloh?
Precisely. They knew the meeting was occurring here. Because they got the same notice. They got the same body part. The meeting was occurring here. Where's God? Up here. Where's the high priest? He's still up here. Where are the archives? They knew no trial was happening. They knew they were out for bloodshed. So that's one aspect that's going on with Benjamin. That's just one. There's a couple of the reasons that are going on. Yes,
yeah,
Ellie.
Also, it says so that we can put him to death. Doesn't say so we can put him on trial.
Right, right. This is that. So they already know they've already established a verdict without a trial at all. It's possible there was some other justifiable reason. Granted, there usually isn't, but it's possible. It's conceivable, I should say. What are the issues that are going on with Benjamin?
Also, they all had evil in their heart?
Not necessarily all, but what I mentioned earlier, Gibeah is the most populous city or town in all of Benjamin. At this point in history, it rivals only Jerusalem and Shechem in size. So where do you think all of Benjamin's leaders lived?
Probably that town.
Most likely in Gibeah, right? So, and is this scenario that occurred to the Levite and his concubine the very first time this has probably ever occurred and no one ever heard of it before in Gibeah?
No.
Not likely. Yes,
just
Tammy.
Like, you know, here in we live in California, our capital is Sacramento.
Right.
So, you know, imagine if you killed the entire, you know, three branches of government in Sacramento. That
would be
a problem. Yeah. It would cause some chaos for a while.
It would.
But on the other part of that is that when stuff happens there, eventually
it spreads.
It will spread.
It's a matter of time.
So the idea that nobody knew that this town was a bad place or blah blah blah.
Right. Most likely they're fully aware. Fully aware. Yes.
But they weren't asking for the heads of the entire city. They were asking for the people who had done it.
The men who had done it. Men of Gibeah. Now we don't know how many there were involved. That's not given in the story. All we know is that men of Gibeah were responsible for it, however many there are. One other aspect. Well, actually, first of all, let me finish the one point. Okay, because there's likely to be heads of government of Benjamin's government, because mind you, each tribe has their own tribe leaders, in the town of Gibeah, if they say, okay, let's involve all the men of Gibeah, all the rest of Benjamin may or may not have said yes. The rest of Benjamites could have said, yeah, go ahead and take them. But that doesn't bode well for your leaders saying, no, don't let them take me. It's not in their best interest to be taken to this mock trial and be executed. Naturally, it's just human. We're humans. That's what we do. So it's not in their best interest to have the whole tribe vote that votes them out to die. So that's one other issue. Let's see, one other one. Okay, one other fact. Because this is so early on in Othniel's time period, all of the men of Benjamin and Judah and every other tribe there is, they're all battle-hardened soldiers at this time. They all are very well experienced at killing.
They worked for Joshua.
I mean, he was a very talented general. Well, all of them got trained during the same process. It doesn't say these were sword-wielding men of Israel that got killed because they'd never wielded a sword before.
Men of valor.
They were warriors. They knew how to kill. They knew how to fight. All right? Benjamin knew how to fight. There's one thing that happens. I don't know about all of you necessarily or believe this, but to me, when I'm pumped up, I feel like I can go do anything, right? I just got pumped up because guess what? God helped me and my whole family destroy all these horrible, evil people. God's on my side. It gives you a false sense of hope and a false sense of security that's not necessarily there. All right, so that is, it's an arrogance. That is also a factor why Benjamin would say, yeah, you guys outnumber us.
Yeah,
bring it on.
You're done.
Yeah. You're done. So there's a little bit going on there as well. So a lot of dynamics are happening. A lot of scenarios. You have the government seat issues. You have the people who are battle-hardened warriors, trained killers, and they know they can cause some serious damage if they are attacked, when it showed quite clearly they could. They did. So it's not in their motive to just say, okay, we'll just abandon to this mock trial system. There's a lot of issues going on here. So that's important to know why Benjamin or where Benjamin's coming from, their perspective, because they're obviously a major and influential factor in this whole story. Okay. Let's move on. Verse 18, I don't like the way this verse is translated into English, but that's okay. It says, they got up and went to Bethel and inquired of God. The children of Israel said, who among us should advance first to wage war against the children of Benjamin? And the Lord answered, Judah should be first. Now, it's translated in English as they went up to Bethel. Well, Bethel is this small town outside of Mizpah. Is God at Bethel?
Not at that early.
Not yet. He's not. He actually don't, he swings through, but he doesn't actually not living there. Where's God actually at?
In Shiloh.
In Shiloh. The term Bethel also means went up to the house of God. See, it's translated in English, and even Jewish commentators point it. Targum translates this into English as Bethel, but every account of the history says it should be Shiloh. So they think Targum, the translation is actually incorrect. See, as a city versus where they would have gone to ask them to inquire. Because where's Phinehas? In Shiloh, where the Ark of the Covenant is, and the Urim and the Thummim are, and everything else is. They have to go to here, to Shiloh. Phinehas is going to travel with the Ark down to Bethel to go deal with one battle and bring it back up to Shiloh. That would be an Eli trait, which we won't need him yet. But Phinehas didn't necessarily do that, especially early on in their attacking. Yes?
Now mine says the house of God, and then down here it says Bethel.
Right.
It's
just a translation.
Does it mean the town Bethel, or does it mean...
Right, because it can be either way, because there's a town called Bethel. We don't know. It's very close by.
In the very beginning, Shiloh was the main...
Yeah.
See. Right. Shiloh was a main
was
a main
was that's where the high priest is.
And where the Levite was traveling to.
Maybe they went to
They're all traveling. They most likely did go to Shiloh. That's my point. Is that it's translated in Bethel, at least in most texts, yours obviously is not, as a city versus in fact it's actually up to Shiloh where they were traveling. It's, yes. Though the map shows a pretty far distance, a runner can make it there and back in about 5 hours. I can't do that. I couldn't possibly. I'm sorry. The number of miles is like, what, three miles or whatever it is? I mean, holy cow. I mean, tag team runner, maybe, if you're lucky, but I couldn't do it. Maybe 4 miles. Yeah, exactly. So, depends on who you are, and maybe they had, you know, horses or whatever, I don't know. Donkeys, whatever to take. But anyway, so in theory, they could have traveled. Not the whole army didn't go up. The whole army of Israel, 400,000 men, don't travel to Shiloh. It's rather crowded if you try to do that. So it would be the leaders that would have gone up if all of them would go up anyway. Okay. So, yeah, I just want to point that out. They would have most likely traveled to Shiloh. God's answer, Judah is first. Now, why doesn't God just say, no, don't do this. You have another issue you have to take care of. There's other problems here. You guys haven't thought through because this is going to kill you. Why doesn't he just tell them what's wrong? Why did Judah discover it? Well, all is, he doesn't say what is wrong. He never says what's wrong.
But he definitely
they didn't ask.
They didn't ask. Said which one first.
Yeah, they had already made their verdict. They already made their solution.
Right.
So why? But why would God say, you idiots?
Don't go.
This is not the point. This is not what you're supposed to be doing.
Right. Did he already tell them?
What did he say?
It's written.
Mm-hmm. Do you know where it's written? Well, actually, where is it? That's right. It tells a couple different ways, a couple different styles. First of all, before I go there, some perceive that this is the core problem. It's just simply because they didn't ask God what to do. They asked who should go. That because they did that, God was so mad at them. That he said, you know what? You don't get to make verdicts on your own. You don't get to make judgments on your own. I'm going to let this happen, and you're going to be paid for it. That's one school of thought. Yeah, I think that's partially there, but that's not my personal school of thought. But that is a school of thought. It's a very popular one as well. Another school of thought. Something is wrong inside of you, in your camp, in your group, your men, that you aren't cleaning up, you aren't doing correctly. And until you address that, I'm not going to help you.
Yeah, how could there be such sexual perversion among God's people?
And so early on.
Yes.
So early on.
I mean, I get the impression that they wanted the man first and then the woman. But they took the woman because they couldn't have the man.
So, yes, that's exactly what they had. Yes, that's exactly. They wanted the male first.
Here.
You see a very abhorrent, disgusting even version of it. Yes, even worse so. Yeah.
I'm seeing
you are seeing correctly. It is the same, actually, it's not quite the same. It's very, very, very similar to Sodom and Gomorrah.
Yeah, what happened with Lot?
Now, with Sodom and Gomorrah, though, it's a subtle difference. It doesn't say all the men of Gibeah that did this.
No, a few men.
Some, yeah, just a portion, the worthless ones. Sodom and Gomorrah, it was all the men of the city. That includes Lot's two son-in-laws, which is quite disgusting as well, but I won't go there either, who die in the process. So there was an abhorrent behavior that was very corrupt and growing, but had not consumed the whole city yet. Now, granted, everybody dies, so they might as well consume the whole city, because
they wouldn't. Yeah, they wouldn't. What I see. Yeah.
So there is a lot of similarities that are not quite as evil as that situation was. Very close to it, though. Richard.
The other thing I've noticed, this is typical with a military unit. They won the battle at the point of the pass. We could do it again. Now, as our victory, we could go out and do it and not asking God to help. To help.
To direct.
Because the battle belongs to God and not to them.
Yes.
Human.
We ran across a similar scenario back in Joshua. Yes, Kathy.
Well, when David brought the Ark of the Covenant back and the person
touched
who...
Touched it.
Yeah.
What's his name? Uzzah. Thank you. Thank you.
And he had to go back and read what the instructions were, basically, so that they could bring the ark in.
They didn't ask. They jumped in and thought they understood.
Every king made sure he read what it was.
That's probably true. Well, at least most of them. Some things maybe not have.
Well, they touched the ark. They didn't touch
it. Yeah, they didn't touch the ark. Well, one came close to it. But anyway, okay. Where was I at here? Hold on a minute. One more thing. Right hand first. Okay, sorry. Go ahead, Rose.
I just had a thought that when he said that Judah shall go first, if we come up to modern day times, Judah right now, Jerusalem, or Israel or whatever, the Jews, right now they are blaspheming all the things that God has them to do. I mean, one of their major towns is like... Tel Aviv, I believe,
right.
Is full of homosexuality.
It is so corrupt. It's corrupt.
Judah's going to go up first at the same time here. Judah's going to get punished first.
I think you're onto something there. Yeah. I think there's one other element I'd like to add to it. And reword this just slightly. You'll catch what I'm saying. Who among us should go up first to wage war against children? The Lord answers, the right hand should go up first.
The right hand?
The right hand should go up first. Well, if you're in Israel, we think north, south, east, west. No. Benjamin's left hand, because they're north. Judah is right hand, they're south. God faces east. We face west, he faces east. That's just the way it works. The back is to the ocean. So it's the right hand goes up first. Then what's the right hand used for?
The sword.
Unless you're left-handed. It is the sword. God's not left-handed. Well, I don't think he is. We'll find out someday. But it is the sword. It's a judgment hand. All right? So if God's going to invict judgment, is he going to use his left hand to do it?
No.
He uses his right hand to do it. So, all right, the right hand, it's like much similar to, okay, my right hand, here's a brick wall. You did something horrible. Pound your right hand into that wall. You break your right hand. You did something bad, Israel. I'm going to hurt you in the process. Same principle. I'm not saying that is the reason. I'm just saying that is an aspect, I think, that's also going on here, as well as corruption, a prophetic future thing that was going to happen with Judah as well. Yes, Ellie.
Well, besides, Judah is the first tribe to move.
They are.
In any tribal movement.
They are the first tribe to move, which is the principle. That's right along with the process. I don't recall which group Benjamin falls in.
It's the second or third.
Okay. So it'd be the third group to move. So I think that's one of the things that are going on here. That's just my personal opinion on the issue. We ran across this story back in Joshua. Not this exact story, but a very similar scenario in the city or town of Ai. Do you recall what happened there? Now, we're going to go back in there and read that real quick if you don't mind, because I think it's important. It's Joshua chapter 7. Yes, that would be the story of Achan. I'm not going to read the entire chapter, it would take too long. Just read a few verses of it. Joshua chapter 7. We're going to start in verse 6. This, of course, after his men had gone up to Ai. Ai had defeated his men, and Joshua was now upset and devastated. Joshua tore his garments and fell on his face to the ground before the ark of the Lord until evening. He and the elders of Israel, and they placed dirt upon their heads. Joshua said, "Alas, my Lord, Hashem Elohim, why did you bring this people across the Jordan to deliver us into the land of the hand of the Amorites, to make us perish? If only we had been content to dwell on the other side of the Jordan. If you please, my Lord, what shall I say now that Israel has turned the back of its neck before its enemies? The Canaanite and all the inhabitants of the land will hear and will surround us and cut off our name from the earth. What would you do for your great name?" The Lord said to Joshua, "Raise yourself up. Why do you fall on your face? Israel has sinned. They have also violated my covenant that I commanded them. They have also taken from the consecrated property. They have also stolen. They have also denied. They have also placed it in their vessels. The children of Israel will not be able to stand before their enemies. They will turn back their necks to their enemies because they have become worthy of destruction. I will not continue to be with you if you do not destroy the transgressor from your midst." Now, the only few times Israel gets routed in such a fashion that has happened in Benjamin. And this is one of them. They outnumbered the men of Ai significantly. And yet they were routed pretty badly. They lost, I forgot how many thousands of men had died. But it's quite a few. So, notice what happened with Joshua. When something bad happened, what did he do? Did he say, "Come on, men, let's all get together. We'll do this again. We'll do it right the next time"?
No,
exactly. Precisely what he did. So what do you think the children of Israel should have done?
Fall on their face before God.
Which they do eventually.
The third time.
Not that it took a little while to get through their thick head. Okay, it took a little bit of effort.
So they all had to die.
Yes.
And still, after the third time.
Still many died. So it was still a process. Well, in Joshua's scenario, they obviously go through the Urim and the Thummim. They pick out this tribe, pick out that family, pick out this man, kill him and his family. Because he stole from the garments of Jericho, which God said, "Everything in Jericho you do not touch." And he saw it, and he took that silver, a few other things, and buried it in his tent. His whole family was aware of it. They didn't say anything. I don't know anything about it. Don't tell that Dad did this, or my son did this. So they all die in the process as well. Because why? Well, they're responsible for the death of thousands of Israelites. His actions were. So, what do you think was happening during Benjamin? Well, my personal opinion is, because they're exact same age almost, he's a little bit younger, Moses' grandson. The establishment of the second priesthood. Which was unacceptable. And Israel did nothing because it was his grandson. I think that's what God was upset with. And I'll back that up with what's happening during Othniel's time recorded in Joshua chapter 3. Let's see, go back to Joshua chapter 3, which is a little bit in Othniel. And this is also a setup. The story was happening with Benjamin is a setup for Joshua chapter 3 to occur. It didn't quite get there until all these men had died. Then Joshua 3 can happen because Israel has become weak. It's key. You can't have a whole lot of fighting men on the side that's supposed to be taken. They'll keep fighting. Well, you kill a whole bunch of them off early, then they're easy to take by a foreign army, which is what happens in Othniel. So it's Joshua chapter 3. Let's see, verse 5 through... Wait, did I get the right book? Hold on, where is it?
Judges 3.
I apologize. Judges chapter 3. Thank you. Judges chapter 3. Like, this doesn't look right. That's not what it says. Okay, Judges 3, verse... verse 5 through... Well, with 5 through 7, that works. Okay, so the children of Israel dwelt among the Canaanite, the Hivite, the Amorite, Perizzite, Hivite, Jebusite. The Israelites took the nation's daughters for themselves, the wives gave their daughters their sons, and they served their gods. The children of Israel did what was evil in the eyes of the Lord, and they forgot the Lord their God, and worshipped the Baals and the Asherah trees. Keep going. The wrath of God flared up against Israel. He delivered them into the hand of Cushim Rishathaim, king of Aram, not king of Syria. And the children of Israel served this man for 8 years. Children of Israel cried out to the Lord. He brought up the Savior, Othniel, son of Kenaz, Caleb's younger brother. All right, so we already know that Othniel took a chunk of Judah's area when they were first conquering the Canaanites. Othniel is a contemporary of, a little bit younger, of Caleb. And Caleb was virtually the same age as Joshua. They fought alongside one another. So they all are pretty good chance they know one another. Most likely Othniel knew Joshua. Most likely Othniel is old enough, he probably knew Moses.
I would think so, yeah.
Most likely, because he would have been his fighting age by the time they took the territory, only a few years after Moses died. So he had to be at least 20 plus, maybe a little bit older. So, but he doesn't become judge, because, you know, if you read the whole thing, judge for 40 years, so it's 8 years minus, with 32 years, he rules Israel. So he becomes judge after this king of Aram comes and takes over. Now, Syria is way far away. They don't have kings nearby. They send troops over. So troops go and fight. Well, if I'm an opposing foreign army, am I going to attack someone that is stronger than I am?
If you have God behind you, why not?
Probably. But I'm a foreign army who believes in different gods, probably a whole bunch of them at the same time. Am I going to attack someone that I think is stronger than I am?
No.
No. I'll go around them. However, am I going to attack somebody who I now think is middle or has gone through a partial civil war?
Sure.
They're easy. They're easy targets. We can take them. I think one of the main thrusts of the reason why those troops were brought over and took over Israel is God was mad. God was mad at Israel. I think the reason that Israel's men, so many of them died while attacking Benjamin, because God was mad at Israel. Now, this description here in Judges says he's mad because they didn't kill off the bad people, which we already know the story. They haven't yet. He had the Levite went around another town that had other foreigners in it. He tried to go to Gibeah because he thought it was safer. They didn't kill off all the Canaanites yet. They're worshiping other gods. Quite clearly, they were from Moses' grandson. He established two idols and said, these are now your gods. They're doing everything they shouldn't have been doing. Which is what God said, all right, during Othniel, early part of his career, I'm taking you over now. Which I believe occurred shortly after this time. Because I don't think Israel figured it out. Nowhere in this story does it say Israel said, oh, now we know why we lost initially. It never discusses that. Yes, Ellie.
Well, and it's funny because his grandson doing that is barely even...
A blurb.
It's just...
Just a blurb.
It's just a minor little word.
Oh, it seems so innocuous.
That started the downfall of much... of the northern area.
It literally started it. That was the initial step.
And nobody even...
Nobody cared. Saw. Nobody did anything about it. So, let's continue on. Okay, so verse 23. So anyway, by the way, that's why I believe God didn't say, oh no, don't do this. Don't go do X, Y, Z instead. Because they didn't address the issue that he would be more angry with. Do you think God would be more angry with homosexuality or corruption on fleshly level versus corruption of destroying his house and destroying his establishment of what is good and what is evil?
Well,
yes, Ellie.
There's nowhere to go. If you sin, you can repent of sin if you have a place to go. If you have no place to go, then sin just goes rampant.
It does. It does continue to grow.
Yeah, that's the first part of it.
You have to establish something that is holy to start with.
Otherwise, you're just treating symptoms and not
causes. Exactly. Nothing ever gets fixed. So in this scenario, yeah, people die. That's kind of a thing that happens on a regular basis throughout the Bible. Groups of people die for doing things that are evil. The one task I think that would have saved them, per se, if I use that term, is ask, why? What is it that we did wrong? Do what Joshua taught them to do 10 years earlier. Get on your face and ask. Now, Joshua and the leaders were there with him as well. Those leaders are
still around.
Put dirt on their pants.
Not all of them, but some of them are still around. They're still alive at this time. Mm-hmm. Still fighting. Phinehas is one of them. Clearly, he's alive. He's still a high priest, so he's not even that old yet. He's relatively old, but he's not a retirement age, but I use that term for high priest. So he's still around. So some of the leaders were there. They would have learned, and they chose not to take that lesson with them. And that's a fundamental flaw, which is why Israel lost so much, so badly here. Okay. Having said all that, they ask again, should we go up? He said, yeah, sure, whatever. Go up. Then, yeah, they get slaughtered again, 18,000 men. Then they figure it out. We're doing something wrong. We don't necessarily know what it is, but we do something wrong. Now they took a lesson of Joshua. Not the whole lesson, but they took a page out of it. They continue on, they go to verse... go back to Judges. Like, man, I'm still in Judges chapter 3. Get back here. Okay, so 26. All the children of Israel went up, came to the house of the Lord. They cried, remained there for the Lord, and they fasted that day until evening. They brought up libation offerings. They brought up peace offerings. So then inquired of the Lord, because this points out that Phinehas was there. Not that he wasn't there a while they were talking about him the previous two events, but that's okay. Should I go out again to make war with Israel, my brother, or should I go home? Note, did they actually ask God, what should I do? No. So they didn't quite get the whole lesson, but they got part of it. Well, okay, God, if I give you these two ultimatums, which one is the best one?
Being limited God.
Yeah, it's like, oh, okay, well, God doesn't want them to go home. Because the Benjamin still has been punished yet for doing something that is evil. So that still has to be done. The proper question, which is what Joshua would ask.
Have I sinned?
What have we done wrong?
What's really going on?
What's actually happening? They never ask that question. But God's a compassionate God. I'll give him full credit for that. He practically invented it. So, go home and do nothing, or go back to war again. All right, you guys have been punished. You know you don't know why you've been punished, but you know you've been punished quite severely. Benjamin needs to be taken care of now. I need to finish that off, so to speak. Now with the living man, go ahead and fight again. You've been sufficiently damaged, but you know something went wrong. You don't necessarily know what it is yet, but I'll give you time. You can figure it out. Right now, we're going to take care of Benjamin now. Now that you realize the mistake has happened, we'll worry about what the mistake is later. Of course, I never do really figure it out, but he's compassionate. For tomorrow, I'll deliver your hand, says the Lord. Then Israel this time again took about a page of Joshua's book, set up an ambush. Just what Joshua did with the children of Ai and the people of Ai. They got out all of those men. Yeah, come out. They'll fight. And then when they're out here, you take them from the behind, take the city, and then we could turn around and kill them. That's exactly what Joshua told them to do. That's exactly what they did. It worked quite well. They destroy and kill everything in Gibeah. Man, woman, child, including livestock. Not a whole lot left. So essentially, Gibeah received the same fate for all practical purposes as Sodom and Gomorrah, didn't they?
Yeah.
And that no one lived. Now, yes, of the 600 men that made it off into the foothills and of Ramon and whatnot, a few of them may have been actually from the town of Gibeah. We don't know. It doesn't really matter. The point is, the town paid, and so did every other town of Benjamin paid. Had the same fate for tolerating something that was abhorrent. It's still an excusable behavior. The drawback with this whole story is that you're dealing with a bad group of people punishing another bad group of people. Well, which one's bad? They're both bad. They're both corrupt. They're both evil. Which one's worse? Well, it depends on your perspective at the moment in time.
Let them beat each other up.
Beat each other up. God punishes them later with Othniel and the troops from Amram who come through and try to take them over. Aram, sorry. So you have this scenario that's going on, which is it's just interesting to note. It's quite a fascinating storyline because it points out that in spite of who Israel is, in spite of that God selected them, they're no different than the people that were taken out of Canaan. He points that out. You guys aren't special. When he selected them in the Torah, so you weren't selected because you were better than everybody else. It's because you're available. Just because I chose you, that's it. I can kill you just as easily as I can kill these people of Canaan. You're no better than them. You do something wrong, I will kill you. Here's an example. You did something wrong, I'm going to kill you. And you did so. They have their limits. They have their rules they have to obey. They have to maintain a certain level of acceptable behavior. Obviously, this was not acceptable behavior. Clearly it wasn't. So many of them died. Not to beat a point to the end, but it's just an important aspect to discuss. So given the ultimatum, obviously they go, they attack. The Benjamites flee. Now they flee, of course, it says they flee to the desert. Well, that's how mine words it. Which is actually interesting because the desert is south of them. The desert, of course, is way the heck down here. Almost all of Simeon, 90% of Judah, virtually the whole area. But what happens to those men who flee the desert? And no, they're desert because that's south. Well, where are all of the Israelite armies? They're all north. They were in Mizpah, right up here. So they're all coming down from the north to the south. So yeah, where are you going to flee if you're Benjamin? Keep running south. And they were captured, they were caught up to and killed, except the 600 who actually didn't flee south. They fled up north to Ramon. Got out of the way. Hi, but 600 people, it's easier to conceal than thousands. They can scatter around and finally make their way from one point to another. So that's what they did. They actually took off and they ran up to Ramon. I don't know if those of you pay too close attention to math, but there's 1,100 men missing. I find it interesting, and not that it really matters to most people, but it's there, so I'll discuss it. Early on, the chapter points out that there are 26,700 Benjamin. In this section, 25,000 are killed, and 600 survived. That's 1,100 men missing. Okay, next topic. Yeah, we don't know what happened to 1,100 men.
No.
We don't even know if the word 1,000 is clan here, 1,000, because it's written at the time of Samuel, which is a contemporary of David, and that was the time which the definition of clan and 1,000 were kind of being intermingled, so we don't really know exactly the real number. But either way, there's 1,100 not accounted for. Or a plan and 100 not accounted for, whatever you want to word it, doesn't make a difference. We don't know what happened to them. It is strong Jewish philosophy and tradition. These 1,100 men fled north and kept fleeing. Well, standard Jewish tradition is they are now what we call Romania. No evidence of that, no proof of that. It's just standard tradition that they're Romania. Now, I don't know if they went to Europe. I don't know. It doesn't make any difference. They could have gone, you know, up to Lebanon and stopped. Who knows? Right. Yes, Jeff.
In all likelihood, seeing how battles usually go, they surrendered.
They may very well may have just surrendered.
That would be my guess.
Never just give up. I don't know what actually happened to them. It is also possible that they died amongst the first two battles and just weren't recorded.
True.
I mean, if you have a 400,000 man army coming against you, well, actually, we have 10% minus that, so it'd be 360,000 men, because the 10% are support staff, coming against you, you're likely going to lose a few. So I don't know if they died during the first two battles. It doesn't record it. Like I said, Jewish tradition is they're now Romanians. How do you pronounce it? Romanians? Romanians, yeah. not Romaniites. I guess something's going different. Yes, Ellie.
There,
it's possible. Yeah, we don't know. There's no proof.
That are not necessarily. They have some basis.
There is.
They left the land of Israel.
They ran.
At that time.
Everybody else followed later. But they.
Well, many years later, right. After the kings were already.
We don't know. It doesn't matter. Yeah. And if they did surrender, they were killed. Just because 600 men left, well, then what happened to the 1,100 they surrendered, if they did surrender? Well, if they're not considered alive, they were killed then. So either they're dead or they left the whole territory. We don't know. It doesn't matter. But it's just an interesting point that if you do note the numbers are they don't add up quite right. But that doesn't really matter. It's not that big of a deal. It's just important. Of these 600 men, one of them was Ehud's grandfather. Do we know which one? No. Doesn't matter. But one of them is grandfather. Because Ehud shows up about 40... full-time of Othniel plus the 18 years, 58 years later, Ehud is of fighting age. So that's approximately a generation and a half. As far as... It's possible it could be his father, but... In which case, Ehud may be a little older when but Ehud rules for 60 years. He had to be really, really, really young when he took his rule of as judge. So I'm guessing it's mostly his grandfather is once the 600. And then, of course, they have a son, naturally, which is Ehud's father. And then Ehud will be a very young man when he becomes judge of Israel. Important that the Benjamites survived. Because otherwise, Ehud wouldn't be there. He wouldn't have spilled out the guts of the bad guy from Moab. I can't remember his name off the top of my head now, but that's all right. And all over his cool upper chamber. He wouldn't have been there with his left hand, because that's how he did it. He can see the foot because he's left-handed, which is unacceptable for most cultures at that time. So that's what's going on. I hope that was actually beneficial to some of you.
Well, you know, I think the discussion of, you know, why bad things happen to good people.
To good people.
I mean, it actually is a good discussion because it gets a bit to what the Apostle Yaakov gets at in the first chapter of his letter. Because, you know, when he's saying that perseverance builds maturity. Because, you know, if you are going through a bad time... You know, maybe something that just happens, maybe a judgment, but either way, you're supposed to learn from it. Persevere and mature through it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always in a situation of asking why. I mean, you see the example of Daniel when he realized this is something that the prophet foretold was going to happen, that they were going to be there for a certain amount of time. In exile, and you know, you look at his life, he wasn't responsible for it. No. He was a kid
right. When
it all went down.
Right. But he still pays for it.
Yet he is still repenting for it in the place of the nation. So,
which is significantly absent at this point in time in the story. There is a fundamental concept that I hope we got at least from the story. Now, the story's not finished yet. We have the continuation of it next time, chapter 21, which is the reestablishment of Benjamin, because now only males are left. There are no women.
Oh, yeah.
As you're fully aware, males cannot give birth. There's an inherent divine inability, so you have to find women, else they're all dead. So we'll deal with that next chapter as far as who and why and whatever, what all is going on. But so it's not completely finished yet. But yeah, it's a great... storyline that points out no matter what happens, when something bad does occur, your function isn't to keep putting your head against a wall.
Ask why.
Say that again.
When something negative occurs, your function isn't to beat your head against the wall, it's to ask why. Find out why.
On your face.
Inquire. That's the goal. Doesn't God always want us to talk to Him? Prayer, fasting, whatever it may be, ask. He's not going to conceal it from you. They didn't ask. He didn't bother telling them. Joshua asked. He told him. it's not necessarily the answer you want to hear or the style in which you would prefer to have it answered, but he'll tell you. You have to ask.